the role of Maine's community health centers throughout the state. Maine's 20 community health centers serve more than 200,000 patients each year. They provide care to anyone who walks through the door, including people with insurance and those without. Despite their critical role in Maine, several community health centers are facing financial challenges right now, as the number of patients they serve has gone up and the number who qualify for Maine care has gone down. Patients who do not have health insurance pay on a sliding scale. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the role and impact of community health centers. We'll learn what services they're able to provide, how they keep going despite budget challenges, and their prognosis for the future. Are you a patient at a community health center? Did you even know they exist? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. Many of us face challenges when it comes to getting in to see the doctor or dealing with the cost of medical care, but that's magnified for so many people in Maine who have little or no insurance, or who are living in poverty, or without a home. Community health centers fill a void for those patients. It is a big void to fill, especially with limited funding. We'll talk about how these centers navigate the challenges that come with providing care to all those who need it. Joining me in the studio today, Vanessa Santarelli is Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Primary Care Association, which represents the collective voices of Maine's federally qualified community health centers. Martin Sable is Director of Health Services at NASN Healthcare, a community-based health care center in Springvale, and Renee Fay LeBlanc is Chief Medical Officer at Greater Portland Health, which serves more than 5,500 patients across four sites in Portland. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever been to a community health center? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Vanessa Santarelli, explain a community health center to those who may never have been to one. Is this sort of like a first care clinic, but for everyone, or are the services more extensive than that?
Right. Thank you so much. Yeah, community health centers are really unique. Community health centers in the state of Maine are serving about one in every seven Maine people, or over 209,000. They provide comprehensive, high-quality primary medical, behavioral health, dental services. Some have pharmacies in them, as well as chronic disease care management services. So they're really unique. There's 70 locations throughout the state of Maine, and they're also very high-quality healthcare services. So we serve anyone who needs healthcare services, but we are also providers of choice for those who might be on Maine care, who have Medicare coverage, or who have private insurance. But we also serve those who don't have healthcare coverage.
How do patients find you?
You know, it's funny. I think some people might be patients of a health center and not even know it. Because we have 70 locations throughout the state, all the way up to places like Fort Kent and Eagle Lake, all the way down to places like Eastport, Lubeck, over to Rangeley, down to Springvale, and many, many points in between, I think that, you know, our community health centers are located in so many communities, and they really are part of the fabric of their communities. So a lot of people get to know them because they're either enrolled as patients or they are family members of people who work at a health center. But we encourage people to come to our website where we have a listing of all of our health centers and show if you don't have one in your community, there's a guarantee that there's one probably in a neighboring community.
We'll put that website on our Facebook page. What is the, do you remember it off the top of your head?
I actually do. It's www.mepca.org.
Okay, thanks a lot. Martin Sable, I understand that every community health center may be a little different than the next, because there's a real community aspect. There's a community board. Tell me how NASN is similar and different from other health centers in Maine. And you're in Springvale, right?
We are, yeah. NASN is an interesting place. We're actually part of York County Community Action Corporation, which is the sort of a comprehensive social service organization serving all of York County. NASN has service sites in Springvale, but we also do school-based health care in North Berwick. We have medical providers in mental health centers in Springvale and Biddeford. We have behavioral health services at the York County Shelter. We offer medical, behavioral health, and dental services in a really, truly integrated fashion. All of our providers work closely. They use the same medical record system, frequent case conferences.
Okay. All right. And Renee, I want you to bring us up to speed on what's going on in Portland. I think people who followed the news maybe heard that the city of Portland was no longer funding the health clinic, yet you're here representing the Portland Community Health Center. Can you kind of take us through the past year and bring us up to speed of what's going on for those who use community health clinics in the Portland area?
Sure. So Greater Portland Health, which was formerly the Portland Community Health Center, started in 2009. I'll go back to that quickly.
Sure.
And was one of the health centers that when Obama took office decided to fund. Initially, the health center did not receive funding when it was first applying. And when it started in 2009, it was a partnership with the city of Portland. And then in 2013, the health center was able to become its own standalone nonprofit, which was the goal, with a community board. And since that time, we have grown at a very rapid rate. So started with one small site, a few hundred patients. We now actually are up to 9 sites because we just added 4 health centers in the schools in Portland. We have over 6,000 patients now and 16 providers as well as 7 volunteer providers. So our services have really expanded tremendously. At the same time, there have been decisions about direct patient care and if the city is going to be providing direct patient care. And so as a health center, you know, really our focus is trying to provide as many services to as many needy people as possible. And so over the last year, in addition to the growth that we've seen with the school-based health centers, we've also grown to bring on a couple of psychiatric nurse practitioners, so we now have more mental health services. We also have integrated behavioral health, as Martin was mentioning. We're bringing on more dental services, trying to bring in a dentist. We're also bringing on providers to do some specialty care, including HIV care, hepatitis, latent TB. So we are really excited to try to offer as many services we can. At the same time, it is a challenge to grow as quickly as we have had to, but that's in response to the need that we see in our community.
Okay, and I want to ask all 3 of you about this because probably our listeners are sitting there thinking, this all sounds great, but how do you do it? How are you funded? The city of Portland is no longer part of the funding mix. How do you do it, Renee?
It's a challenge. I think that the first thing is that we have a tremendous mission and we're very mission driven and we try to make all of the money that comes into the health center go as far as possible to support that mission. Our budget is a little under $8 million. We get about $3.5 million from the federal government. And the rest we need to get through other ways. And so, you know, people ask me all the time, how can I help the health center? And I tell them, you know, if you have health insurance, you can become our patient because that allows us to see more uninsured patients. And right now, out of the over 6,000 patients we have, over 3,000 of those patients have no insurance. And so it's a real challenge for us. We try to be as value-based as possible in the care that we provide. And really, you know, when people who come to us do have insurance, we're able to get reimbursement that way. And like I said, you know, that really helps us pay for those who don't have insurance. But I wouldn't say it has not been easy in our current environment.
And Vanessa, you were nodding just about the whole time Renee was talking. This is the case all over the state that those who have insurance, if they use a community health center, they're actually helping that community health center be able to provide services to those who do not.
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually a patient of the Sheepscot Valley Health Center, which is part of HealthReach Community Health Centers. So, but I would say, just picking up on what Renee was saying, health centers are funded through sort of a patchwork of resources. So, yes, they get federal-based grant support to help cover some of the cost of providing care for the uninsured, but it's insufficient to meet the full need. And so, similar to other types of healthcare practices, health centers get reimbursement from the state through the main care program, through the federal government, through Medicare, as well as from commercial payers for people who have private insurance. I would like to say that if Maine, until last year, was the only state in the Northeast in which the state of Maine did not provide direct financial support as supplemental to the community health centers like they did in other states. And we were successful in the legislature in a broad bipartisan way, provided some resources in the biennial budget to help provide some additional support to the community health centers, especially in light of the fact that Maine is also the only state in the entire Northeast which has not yet accepted the federal funds that are available to expand access to about 70,000 people to restore health coverage and also expand access.
So let's explore both of those just a little bit more. So the first step, the legislature did allocate some direct funding for community health centers. How much money was that? And in did it start in July at the beginning of the fiscal year? When did that begin?
Yes. Yeah, so the legislature appropriated $500,000 in each biennium. It's a small and modest step, but it's an important one. We hope that in future years we can grow that appropriation to help cover the cost of care for the uninsured, as well as for recruitment and retention of primary care providers to the health centers. But those resources started in the last fiscal year, so prior to June 30th, and then each year moving forward, it's statutorily codified that the health centers each must get $25,000 apiece, because there's 20 federally qualified health centers in the state. So when you divide 500,000 by 20, that's the appropriated amount.
And the second part of your question, talking about Maine not accepting the federal match from what would be Maine Care, how many people would be insured and be able to use your health centers with insurance as opposed to on a sliding scale if Maine were to accept the match?
Sure. Thank you for the question. So Maine has the opportunity right now to accept millions of dollars that are available from the federal government, just like over 30 states in the country have, to bring in these federal resources to restore coverage to the 40,000 that were dropped from the Maine Care program in previous years, as well as to expand access to health coverage for an additional 30,000. For the health centers, but also for hospitals and other types of practices around the state, healthcare providers, getting reimbursement strengthens the financial health of our health centers and other practices and enables us to serve a greater population.
And I want to ask you, Martin, how all of these elements that we're talking about have affected your health center, and specifically in the past few years, as Maine has tightened its Maine Care eligibility and as we have refused this federal matching dollars, have you seen more patients, and have you seen more patients who do not have health insurance?
We sure have, yeah. At the beginning of 2014, when the Maine Care program cut eligibility for 40,000 people statewide, from that point on until quite recently, half of all our new patients were coming in without health insurance coverage. Something that's one of the characteristics of a community health center is that we take all comers. A person's financial picture, their insurance coverage, has no bearing on whether they become patients, nor any clinical decisions that are made in their care. So we have sort of our fixed federal resources, and we have our relatively fixed number of people with commercial insurance. So when Medicaid was cut, it was a big jolt for us as well as for our sister health centers around the state.
Are you ever worried that you won't be able to continue to do what you do?
I wouldn't say worried. Healthy concern, absolutely. We've got a strong board, a strong staff, and no matter what, we're going to make it work. But yeah, it's been tight for the last couple of years.
And I would just add, I mean, it's not just about restoring and gaining access to health care services, but this is a real economic issue for the state of Maine, and I would argue that it's probably the single best way to stimulate Maine's economy by bringing in these federal resources. When you consider that had Maine passed the bill to do this last session, we would have brought in over $200 million to the state of Maine. And if you look at, we've been talking about this in terms of jobs. So we've all seen the unfortunate situation whereby mills have laid off thousands of workers over the past several years. The estimates are that if Maine accepted these funds, we could actually grow jobs, up to 4,000 jobs in many of the communities that have lost them, good-paying jobs with health benefits, not in the mills, but in healthcare type sector jobs. And I would say that our health centers are also in a number of the communities where we've lost jobs from the mills. And so this is an economic issue just as much as it's an access to health care issue.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about community health centers. Before we go to a break, Renee and Martin, I want to ask both of you about the changing nature of the patient. We hear a lot in the news. We've done programs here on Maine Calling about the opiate crisis. Are you seeing more and more patients? And is this something you are able to keep up with, the need?
So yes, we are seeing more patients. Every time a patient that's less than 50 dies at the health center, I do a review of that case. And in the last year, every single case has been an opiate case. And it's awful. It's awful to watch. And it, I think, is the biggest epidemic of our time, and that we as healthcare professionals need to really be part of the solution. We did receive a grant within the last year to start a substance use program within the health center for our health center patients, and we're in the process of developing that program, ramping that program up. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. We will be able to help some patients, and it won't be enough. Mm. And the services in our community and our state, we don't have detox beds. We don't have IOP programs, which are intensive outpatient programs that many of our patients need. We don't have adequate ways to get people into housing and jobs. So it's not just the drug itself. It's all of the things that go with it. And it's devastating, and it's hitting young people. And so it's extremely concerning. We are absolutely trying to respond as a health center. I think it's our obligation to do so. But it is a tremendous problem in our community right now.
Martin, how are you all responding?
We're trying to respond as well. I think it's really important to keep in mind that we're talking about a chronic condition here. This is substance use disorder is often stigmatized. It's a sign of weak character. It's a sign that folks just can't say no, or take simplistic steps and get over it. I mean, it's a complicated chronic condition. It's one that is certainly a healthcare issue. But as Renee said, it's very much a community issue as well. In York County, our public health structure has sort of a small working group that's trying to approach substance use disorder as a community topic. We and probably half of the community health centers around the state now are in some version of implementing medication assisted treatment. It's pretty clear the overwhelming evidence suggests that it's a medication issue, but it's also a psychotherapy issue, it's a counseling issue. And we're really trying to get our structured programs in place.
Believe it or not, we have to take a break. When we come back, your comments and questions about community health centers. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the League of Women Voters of Maine, celebrating National Voter Registration Day on September 27th. Learn more at lwvme.org. And Condo Furniture by Endicott Home, offering non-toxic solutions for downsizing and living well in smaller spaces. condofurniture.com.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, historian Jill Lepore takes the long view on the presidential debates. Complain all you want, Jill says the problems are nothing new.
When you think about it, political debate has been having a terrible century. People have a hard time talking to one another about politics, not just politician to politician, neighbor to neighbor, cousin to cousin.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
And join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour, Saturday afternoon at 3 or Sunday evening at 11.
Ask any parent, how do you answer that question? The question that reminds you, you have no idea what you're doing.
And then she said, but how does it happen when a man and woman are together? Like, does the man just say, is now the time to take off my pants? And I said, yes.
Succeeding as an amateur, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And join us for TED Saturday afternoon at 2 or Wednesday evenings at 11.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, learning about Maine's community health centers. With me in the studio, Martin Sable, who's Director of Health Services at Nassen Healthcare. Renee Fay-LeBlanc, Chief Medical Officer at Greater Portland Health. And Vanessa Santarelli, Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Primary Care Association. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post on our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Victoria Foley. She is a patient at Greater Portland Health as well as board president. Victoria, I understand you are one of the folks that Renee was talking about. You have health insurance and choose to go to Greater Portland Health.
That's absolutely right, Jennifer, and thank you for having me on. I chose to go to Greater Portland Health back when it was Portland Community Health Center. I think I became a patient about 6 years ago, and I was looking to do something just like Renee was saying, something to help an organization in the community that I felt strongly about, and by using my insured status to help support other people having access to health care, I thought that was a win-win, and the quality of care is excellent. I think we really have a lot of work to do in the community, just, you know, reminding people that a healthcare center, a community health center, is a place where you can get a very high quality of compassionate care, regardless of your insurance status.
Now you're not only a patient, but board president. Talk about the role of the boards of these community health centers. What are you doing? Are you actually deciding what kind of care will be offered? Are you helping to raise money? All of the above?
Well, as chair of the board and as a board member, one of our biggest roles is to be a champion and an ambassador. There are 19 requirements that the federal government asks us to meet in our role as board members. We don't necessarily, you know, get involved in the day-to-day healthcare decisions. That's the job of our amazing staff and providers. But what we can do is, like you're saying, help with fundraising efforts, help get the word out about who the health center is, who they serve, what they can do, and help advocate for policies and funding that will allow the health center to do its good work for more people.
All right. Well, Victoria Foley, thanks so much for joining us. Victoria is president of the board of Greater Portland Health. We're going to move on now. We're going to go to Sydney, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Sydney. Go ahead.
Hi there. Kind of relating to the topic that you actually were just talking about with the board members' role, do you find that community health centers run into any sort of opposition similar to that of Planned Parenthood? I'm not sure if you provide those type of services, but I'd assume that a lot of women's health and pregnancy health is provided there. So I just want to know if you run into any sort of opposition similar to that, and if so, kind of how you approach that and how you're different from places like Planned Parenthood.
Vanessa, you're shaking your head.
That's a great question. Actually, I want to just mention that community health centers' boards of directors by federal law must be made up of 51% of patients of the health centers. So I just want to make sure I shared that because it's a really unique feature of the health centers. And community health centers enjoy really broad bipartisan support, but so does Planned Parenthood. I mean, we're partners with Planned Parenthood And they provide really high quality services as well, healthcare services that are really critical to people all across the state. Our health centers do not provide the same types of services, reproductive health services, abortion services, but they do provide access to family planning services and those sorts of things. But I am not aware, perhaps Renee or Marty are aware of any types of opposition, but not to the degree that we've seen levied against Planned Parenthood. And I think that it's unfortunate because they do provide really high quality health care services.
Yeah, so I would agree with that in that we provide a wide range of services and have not had any negativity toward the services that we provide. One of the things that the board does do is that they approve the services that we provide. And so part of what we do as a federally qualified health center is we have a list of what are the services that we provide, how do we provide them, do we provide them within the health center walls, do we provide them through referral services, and those things are reported to the federal government so they're aware of the services that we're providing. And whenever we're adding a new service, that is something that goes up through the board. And so the board really does, they don't ever make decisions like in a patient room about a patient's care. That is very much the provider patient. But they do help us make decisions about the direction of the health center and what kind of services we're offering. And when we're adding services, those are things that the board approves. And I would say in at Greater Portland Health anyway, our board members are filled with champions for this work, and it's really, they're a wonderful group of people to work with, and they've set a really good direction for our health center.
Martin, earlier Renee talked about some of the care that's, some of the services and some of the staff at the Greater Portland Center. What about at your center? Who is someone likely to see? Is someone likely to see a primary care physician, a nurse practitioner? What is a typical experience for someone coming in, either for a checkup or with, you know, maybe I think I have the flu?
Yeah, it varies some. We encourage folks to establish as primary care patients of the health center and then seek behavioral health care as needed and dental care services as well. Some folks take just the dental door and they're well established with a different PCP. It's patient-centered care, so it's all about the relationship between provider and patient, and we have evidence-based care that we encourage people to take advantage of. However, folks ultimately decide what works best.
Okay, and who's on your staff?
We have nurse practitioners, we have physician, we have one dentist, one dental hygienist, four behavioral health providers. Nurse care manager. In addition to the direct service provision, we really see the value of things like population health, nurse care management, helping folks with really complicated problems, conditions, navigate the healthcare system, case management for folks who may benefit from community resources that they may not know about. We're very conscious of the fact that we're taking care of the whole community. So, for example, on Election Day, we're going to be offering voters flu shots. So we'll have volunteers at our different polling sites around Sanford, and we'll be offering cider, pretzels, and flu shots at the health center.
That's a great idea. Moving on to Anne Marie, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Anne Marie. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for taking my call and for offering this forum. I don't know if I have more of a question or than a comment, but I'm listening to this show, and I'm listening to, you know, Dr. Renee Fay-LeBlanc is top of the heap. These are dedicated medical professionals, and the people, when they can get the care, are getting top-notch care, and I think that needs to be said. Having said that, in this political environment, I think on a national level, but more so in my beautiful state of Maine, where we are good people and we take care of each other, the poor have been vilified. that it is not okay to be poor. It's not okay to need any type of service from the government, no matter what your situation is. But I just don't understand how one person, the governor, can make the decision by himself to turn away federal funds that are right there. Why is he able to do that? Where are the checks and balances? This is not going to impact our state favorably to not accept them. In fact, it's going to hurt the people.
Anne Marie, I think a lot of people share your frustration, but Anne Marie, this is the legislature was unable to pass this with a veto-proof majority, correct?
Yes, I think that certainly the administration has been clear in their opposition to bringing these available resources into the state of Maine, and we hope that they will reconsider that position. But yes, Jennifer, you're right, that the legislature has had numerous opportunities over the years, and unfortunately, we've fallen short by veto overrides of as little as 2 to 3 votes. And when you consider that, you know, the state of Maine, there are never any conversations like this when we talk about bringing in federal funds for road and bridge construction, bringing in federal funds for public works projects. And yet, when we're talking about bringing in significantly more federal resources for offering people quality health coverage, unfortunately, we haven't been able to have that pass in the legislature. I think that we have an opportunity as candidates are knocking on people's doors this fall. In fact, a candidate knocked on my door the other day, and this was the first question I asked was their position on this very issue. And I think that as long as people are bringing those things up and candidates know that they're important, I think that that could help us maybe get to the threshold that we need to override a veto next session.
All right. Anne Marie, thanks so much for your call. I know that in the tightening of who qualifies for MaineCare in Maine, a great proportion of the folks who've gone off the rolls are single men in a certain age group. Is that, Renee, you're nodding, is this the population that you're seeing more and more of at your clinic? And my question has been, are we seeing people who have mental health issues have a harder time getting access to medication and care?
So, yes, one of the groups of people that we're seeing are uninsured males. Many of the people suffering from homelessness who used to qualify for MaineCare are now not qualifying for MaineCare. And many of those people have co-occurring physical and mental illness. And so we have seen increase in not necessarily just mental illness, but sort of the severity of mental illness. And as a primary care practice, you know, feedback that I've been getting from providers over the last couple of years is that, you know, the intensity of the illness and the medications required for patients is sort of outside of what a usual primary care physician would feel comfortable doing. And so that really prompted us. We have a wonderful volunteer who is a psychiatrist who spends 4 hours a week with us, which is fantastic. And then we have just hired 2 psychiatric nurse practitioners as well in an effort to try to address the need that we have seen, which is difficulty accessing mental health services. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're talking about community health centers today on Maine Calling. We're going to take another break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Senior Guide, hosting the Seacoast Senior Expo from 9 to 3 on October 26th at the Kittery Community Center in Kittery. More at maineseniorguide.com. Gnome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance. GnomeLandscapes.com. And Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint. Casella, giving resources new life.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, Secretary of State Kerry accuses Russia of bombing an aid convoy in Syria. Hundreds are feared dead after a migrant boat capsizes off the Egyptian coast. And the U.S. allows Boeing to sell passenger planes to Iran.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show International Week in Review, coming up at 2 o'clock. Maine Public Radio and Television are once again in unity at this year's Common Ground Country Fair, which runs through Sunday. If you're attending the fair, please stop by the Maine Public booth and say hello. We're located right by the exhibition hall. This year at the Common Ground Country Fair, we're holding a casting call to celebrate our new name, Maine Public. Stop by and see if you have what it takes to end up on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television. The Common Ground Country Fair is the annual event of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, celebrating the rural lifestyle of Maine. Fair includes livestock, crafts, food, demonstrations, kids' activities, and much more. You can visit mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how community health centers in Maine are doing. With me in the studio, Renee Faye LeBlanc. She's with Greater Portland Health, Vanessa Santarelli, the Maine Primary Care Association, and Martin Sable, Nassen Healthcare. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, headed to Waterville and Robert. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi there, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to your discussion today and on the panel, and I was back in the 1970s. I was a young guy who was took on the job of directing a little family health clinic. And I must admit that although it was a small clinic, many of the things that your panel is talking about today were the same struggles that I was having way back then, and both my predecessors and those that came after me. And I'm wondering, you know, this is a lot of time has passed, and we're still having the same issues of coverage for the same type of people. After all of those years, we're still having the same issues. So my question is we're doing something wrong. I mean, we shouldn't be doing this for years and years and years. And I know that that the state of Maine actually explored a single payer healthcare system back in the early 2000, and concluded that it was actually feasible financially. And yet, 15 years or 14 or so years after that was looked into, we still don't have a single payer system. And they're listening to a show where some really good people and good organizations are still struggling to provide a service.
Well, Robert, I know that many people share your desire for a single-payer health system. Vanessa, does the Maine Primary Care Association take a stand on that?
We haven't taken a stand on that recently, just because, you know, now that we're very supportive of the Affordable Care Act having passed, and every health center has a certified application assister that helps to sign people up for health insurance on the marketplace. Interestingly enough, even though Maine was one of the leading states in the country in helping to sign people up for health coverage on that, we were the only state in the country that didn't see a net decrease in the numbers of uninsured for some of the reasons that we've discussed earlier today. I really appreciate the caller's comments as it relates to this, and I think that we're hopeful that, you know, Maine will make some smart policy decisions in the upcoming session that will allow us, the states that have passed accepting the federal funds to expand access to coverage under their Medicaid programs, have seen sharp increases. And we were just talking with the Region 1 CMS administrator the other day. Huge differences in those states in terms of the decreases in uncompensated care at hospitals, increases in people covered for health purposes, and, you know, there are massive differences between states that have taken that route and states like ours that have not yet done so.
Robert, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Martin.
I think we'd all agree that access to healthcare services is a basic human right. I mean, it's just food, shelter, clean air. People need to have access to folks who can assess, diagnose, treat conditions, and prevent them. Having said that, it's also pretty clear that there's this thing called social determinants of health, so that even if folks have great access to healthcare services, if there are other things happening that impede good nutrition, shelter, transportation, other, educational achievement, they won't fare as well as folks who have all those needs met. I mean, they're even fully insured folks with access to coverage still may have additional things that are impeding their overall health and well-being. And it's a very large, complicated societal problem that we talk about a lot, and we're trying in sort of incremental steps to address some of these issues.
We're going to go to Jamie calling from Caribou. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to be as brief as I can. My concern is that I'm in Caribou, and these health clinics and whatnot that do receive funding, there is just such an overwhelming need right now. And the Bangor Daily News did a great series not too long ago about the addiction problem in Maine, and it's countrywide, nationwide. And so right now, it just seems like these community centers really do need to have help in place for the communities that they're involved with.
All right, Jamie, you're breaking up a little bit, but Vanessa, that's, you said more than half now do, right?
Yes, I believe more than half of our health centers are offering medication-assisted treatment services, as well as wraparound behavioral health counseling and support services. Pines Health Services is up in Caribou, so I don't know if your caller is a patient at Pines, but they're a great health care resource. And then another six of our health centers are actually planning to provide those services. They're in the process of expanding.
Just
their health
hard to keep up with the need.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm going to go to Somerville and Roy. Hi, Roy. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a family doc, and I've been in a rural health center outside of Augusta for 36 years, and could echo a lot of the things that have been said. Wanted to mention one couple things. One is part of the reason rural health centers always have financial problems is that we do primary care, and in this country we don't honor primary care, and by honor I mean what's paid for it by insurance companies and employers. So I make a perfectly good salary, but the orthopedic surgeons at the hospital nearby make seven times what I make, and that attracts a lot of young practitioners, either doctors or mid-level practitioners. It makes it harder and harder for the health centers to recruit people. The other thing I want to say is the talk about medically assisted treatment for substance abuse. It's a huge problem. We're allowed with this treatment called buprenorphine to have 100 patients, and I've been at that limit for several months now. We turn down one or two patients a day. We've gotten all our other mid-level providers at the center trained, but they still aren't allowed to prescribe those drugs, and we're waiting for new federal regulations.
So the regulations, the limit is federal?
Yes, they finally have approved that mid-level providers, nurse practitioners and PAs can prescribe these drugs, but they haven't put through the regulations to make it happen. They've often also raised the number of patients that individual doctors can see, but haven't put through the regulations to make that happen. The other thing I'd mention is even though we see everybody and try to treat everybody the same, many of my male patients who got dropped from main care had to switch from the ideal form of buprenorphine treatment to a generic, which has some certain limitations, but it's all they could afford when they had to buy it on their own. And one other service we provide at the health centers is that we have staff who can help people get medication for free from the drug companies when they can't afford it. And we've gotten three people so far the hepatitis C treatment, which is $85,000 worth of pills for free from the company. And it's another kind of thing that takes our staff time, but it's really important to serving the public.
Roy, thanks so much for calling in. You could see our panelists nod with just about everything you said.
Last year, health centers provided over $6.5 million in free and reduced cost prescriptions to their patients, not including the 340B drug discount program, which is likely would double that amount.
Right. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for the good work that you do. We're going to move on now to Ashley, who's calling from Lincoln. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just curious, are insurance carriers required to have the providers of community health centers in their network?
Do you want me to answer that?
Sure.
So the way that most insurance companies work is that as a provider, you get credentialed through the insurance company. And so I, for instance, am credentialed through a variety of different insurance companies so that anyone with any kind of insurance can come to see me.
All right.
We haven't had any problems with that.
No.
That I'm aware of it throughout the system. The payers are very anxious to have providers on credentialed with them.
So you're likely in the network, if whatever health insurance you have in Maine. Quick email from Philip. Is there a community health center in Ellsworth?
Interestingly enough, there is a health center in Bucksport Regional Health Center, and they have actually applied for a new access point location in Ellsworth. So we will find out hopefully within the next couple of months. That's the goal.
And we have from Rick on Facebook, who is on the board of the Harrington Family Health Center. He writes, it's a struggle for HFHC to continue to offer quality medical and dental care. Funds are always tight. Federal oversight is stern and strict, and recruiting providers to the center remains a major hurdle, given the comparative isolation of Harrington, Washington County, as opposed to more urban centers. Vanessa, are you hearing this from any of your rural centers?
Recruitment and retention of providers, and I know Marty and Dr. LeBlanc can probably speak more articulately about this, but is probably the top concern. We have some health centers where it takes up to 2 years to recruit a primary care provider. And the difficult thing is, you know, when you look at a state like New Hampshire, which spends $400,000 every biennium in direct state loan repayment, Maine doesn't do that. We don't have the same robust set of tools in our toolbox to use to recruit providers here. And as you know, they're carrying a lot of medical debt, but medical school debt.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. We just fortunately this week filled a position that had been vacant for 18 months. We have a new medical director, and that opening had been open for 18 months. I heard an interesting statistic the other day. There's one health system in California, the Kaiser Permanente system, has more vacancies than medical school graduates in any given year.
Mm.
So,
and we've done programs on nursing, and nursing programs can't accept as many students as they would like to, or the country needs them to. One more call, Kimberly, calling from the Mid-Coast. Kimberly, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yes, I just work for a nonprofit in the Mid-Coast, and we just found out in the last 10 days that our insurance is going to go up 36%, which is going to be, instead of $62 out of each paycheck, it'll be $170. And I worry about the clinics and people like me who are working above the poverty level, but working, and what's going to happen when we get these surprise premiums that I just don't know whether I'm going to make the year on it.
Yeah. Something that we see a lot is folks who are in your boat and who have maybe lower premiums but incredible deductibles. So, you know, $5,000 deductible in the course of a year is essentially not a lot of insurance. So we do offer – health centers are able to offer sliding fee discounts to folks who are in that position. So if I'd encourage you to check out your local – community health center and look into the sliding fee scale.
Yeah, great point to end the hour on. And really quickly, Renee, I understand you have something going on right now, today and tomorrow in Portland.
We do. Very exciting. We have a vision van that's coming through the Clinicians for the Underserved and Environ, and they're coming to our 180 Park Avenue site today from 3 to 7 to do free vision screenings. Walgreens will be there giving free flu shots. And tomorrow from 9 to 1, they will be back giving free vision screenings to children, and flu shots will be available as well. And for those who screen positive and need glasses, they'll be able to get them for free.
And this is in Portland, your Park Street location, which borders Deering Oaks Park.
That's right.
So we have to go. Thank you so much. That was Renee Faye LeBlanc, who's Chief Medical Officer at Greater Portland Health, which serves four sites in Portland. We also have Vanessa Santarelli here. She's Chief Executive Officer of the Maine Primary Care Association, and Martin Sable, Director of Health Services at Nassen Healthcare, based in Springvale. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produced the program. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.